Welcome back to the Lighthouse London podcast. I am Tom, and we have another edition of our startup stories today. We've got Ben Bowler here from Chew. Hey.
Hi, how's it going?
Great to have you down. Thank you for coming in.
No, thank you for having me down.
We'd love to know a little bit about you and about what Chew's all about. I know I've actually signed up to your service recently.
Oh, great. I'm expecting to see some sexy.
I'm sure we can come into that later on. But why don't you, for our listeners who haven't maybe heard of you before, give us a bit of background about yourself and about what Chew's all about.
Yeah, so I suppose it's best to say what I do first, and it will make sense of where I came from, I suppose. So Chew is a live streaming platform, which is very trendy right now with Twitch and Facebook Live and all those out there. But our focus really is connecting DJs, music producers, and personalities in music, which is a kind of a broader category and term we've developed for some other content creators on the platform that don't necessarily fall into the few categories. Well, it's we're kind of an interesting platform because we're not all about big artists necessarily. We're more about connecting content creators in music. So we started out with a lot of DJs through my friends and through friends of Will, my co-founder, and we had music producers come in and start streaming from there. But then there's this strange other category which is more similar to Twitch streamers, who, if you don't know Twitch, it's a platform where gamers live stream themselves playing games for hours on end and people watch
I've heard about this. I think I'm a little bit old to understand why someone would want to do that, but maybe I get it.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting kind of generational shift around how young people, or the content that young people want to see, and a lot of times they don't care about production values, it's more about the personality behind it. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're starting to see in music. So we've got people that come on and stream and their DJ skills are questionable, or sometimes, you know, it's more about the person and talking about
or about what they're playing.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did why music, why DJing, why this kind of thing, where does that come from?
So it came out of a lot of things I was doing before I started Chew. I've kind of had a real musical thread in my life since I was young. My dad's a jazz arranger and saxophonist.
Nice.
I was playing drums with Pee Wee Ellis when I was 10 years old.
Awesome.
And then it was all downhill since then. But I started kind of just as out of college doing web development. Mm-hmm. Really wanted to get into some music specific career. So I went for a few internships in London. So I went to a few studios, a few record labels, and ended up at a company called AEI Media. Which is
that one.
You know it?
I do, yeah.
Ah, good.
That's the one run by the Risky.
That's it, yeah. So I kind of went in for Drum Bass Arena, which is Risky's thing, because I was really into drum and bass at the time, mm-hmm. still am. And ended up, from 1 month internship, marketing internship, ended up being there for about 3.5 years, building loads of different projects, working on all the different brands. They run a lot of other brands like UKF and...
Yeah, I know from Drum and Bass Arena as well, but there was, I met him, what's his real name? I can't remember what it is.
James Cotterill.
That's the one, that's
his formal name for the Risky.
I only knew him as the Risky, which is quite weird. but then coming from a world of pseudonyms and DJ names, it's not so weird. So you say you got the domain name 3 years ago. That was when you first had this idea of what it was going to be, or?
So at the time it was just... I was actually just sitting, I think I was sitting in a YouTube workshop mm-hmm. in the last few months that I was at AEI talking about something. And I was looking for a more generic term for Eat Bass, a new way of consuming music. And I think I've got a little sheet document somewhere of all the different horrendous name choices that potentially could work. And Chew.fm came out, registered it. I like the sound of it. It is quite hard to put across to someone in a loud room, I have to say, but apart from that, it's catchy, it's short.
Well, that's all you
it's
need.
It's got lots of links.
So you've got the domain, you've got a name.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the initial idea that you wanted to have? Did you have a plan, or was it just a rough sketch of something you wanted to make, or, you know, what were the first steps?
Again, it all happened in stages. So Chew as Chew itself has kind of got two kind of key stages, and it's kind of the anchor point is the Ignite program, mm-hmm. Ignite Accelerator program that I was on with my co-founder Will at the end of 2014, beginning 2015. So before that, Will I'd originally met after following his blog for years while I was at AEI. He ran a blog called Fat Kid on Fire, or still does.
Okay.
That is a dubstep, streetwear, and and technology kind of blog.
Nice. I've heard of it. Sounds cool.
Yeah, it's well worth checking out. He's now still running the label side of it very, very strongly, doing really, really well. And I just really loved the way all the things he was writing. Invited him down originally when we were doing Eat Base. We met at Costa in Oxford Street. And
I was like, glamorous.
Can you help? Can you write some blog posts for my
right.
little side project?
Yeah, yeah.
And then a year later, when it was due and I was doing all this kind of freelance stuff outside of Vice, Will kind of ended a stint at an agency, mobile agency. So he was actually full-time before me on Chew.
Got it, okay.
And we were doing a production agency, effectively. So we got a startup loan, went down with cameras, filmed events, live-streamed events, and we had a little technology component to that. So we had the platform. And quite naively, we'd charge £500 a month for the platform, and yeah. we'd give you one free live-streamed event.
Okay.
Which effectively meant that people would sign up for a month,
yep.
get one event, pay £500 yeah. for it, and then
disappear. Yeah.
So we did some good events. We did some events for, we did a promo stream for the Mobos.
Oh, cool.
We worked with Tate Britain and did one of the latest.
How did you manage to get those kind of clients? Just through your contacts, through Vice? And
the thing, Mobos or? One came out of a friend from Drum Based Arena.
Right, okay.
The circle was complete. She ended up working there, and we called me up one day, said, need some live streaming work. Tate Britain one was through a mentor at the Business Loan.
Got it.
So a lot of great links there, actually.
So talk about getting the loan. I mean, that's not actually, we haven't had many people through who've done that before.
Yeah.
How did that come about, and how did you find that process? You know, was it easy, difficult?
Yeah, it was, I found it quite easy. I went to an event where they were pitching, they were almost pitching to you to get the
right.
loan, I suppose.
Really?
But you had to go through, maybe it was about a month and a half of cash flow forecasting, sitting down every couple of weeks with her, and not really an advisor, but a mentor and a mm-hmm. financial person to check your model. And then, yeah, we got £5,000 each. So mm-hmm. it's a startup loan scheme.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing I'd say with that, though, is that really for that level of idea and that level of income, it probably wasn't the right thing.
Right.
I mean, it kept us going, but really we weren't in a really highly profitable business.
Yeah, yeah.
And then what you kind of realize is that you have to pay it back.
Yeah, okay.
Which yeah. obviously you know going in, but still you don't realize, you know, how much £300 a month coming out is, can be quite painful.
Yeah.
Especially as when we got to the point where we went on Ignite and we had to stop doing any of that work to then prepare for this part of the last stage of a business, and we still had to kind of find £300 a month to come out of the account. But I think it's there for the right business. I think you need to be at the right stage.
Yeah.
But it's there. Sounds like a fair bit
of effort went into getting it. I mean, if you...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Reasonable forecasting document. There was a lot of help there, a lot of support.
Right.
The application was a few pages.
Cool.
That's
good to see that kind of stuff exist, you know, that there are quite a lot of options out there for people to get a bit of money in the door just to kind of push something out or you know, get a business running.
I think for me, that would work really well if I was thinking about doing that again at a later stage. So I've got a real bad habit of jumping too early into things.
Okay.
So I left Vice when I really didn't need to, or maybe 6 months too early, and was scraping around doing contracting while trying to still run Chew.
Yeah, I know the experience of that.
Yeah. I mean, really, I should have stuck with it. But I would have waited maybe 6 months until we had reliable income and then jumped in there. But for a business where you have big invoices or invoices of some kind, unlike Chew today, I think it's quite a valuable thing to consider.
Yeah,
and then you don't give up any equity, obviously. So
they're very handy, yeah, definitely. Mm. So you talked about Ignite, and that was the kind of major stepping point for Chew.
Yeah.
So going in, the idea was that you didn't have any kind of preconceptions about what you'd come out with at the end?
Yeah, I think we had some ideas around the area we wanted to work in and the problems we wanted to solve, but that wasn't necessarily what we came out with.
Okay.
At the time we went in with the idea that we put forward to Ignite was that we were solving the music licensing issue for live streaming platforms.
Right.
So we were going to use audio fingerprinting to get artists paid effectively for mixes, which was a nice idea, but I think on the first week sat down, phoned PRS and PPL, the collecting agencies, and realized that if they were our only customer in the UK, then it's not necessarily going to be a very, very successful business.
That sounds like a tricky one to solve, definitely. I mean, I know that SoundCloud and MixCloud and people like that have struggled with that kind of thing for a while, right? So
All the platforms do.
Yeah.
But I think the learning from the Ignite program was really what got us, or the learning from that stage, I suppose, what got us into the program was more our range of skills as a founding team, and I think, I don't know, potentially our enthusiasm and our excitement for it. Wouldn't want to say too much about that, but that Paul, I think, would admit that a lot of that program is about being a good team.
Yeah.
So that's what I've said to a few people that I've met recently who are trying to, you know, asking about how that worked, how they got into Ignite, because Ignite is a very early stage program, unlike Techstars, where it's
You have to have some level of success already for Techstars, right?
Yeah. They're looking for a certain level of business. Whereas with Ignite, I think it's about the team. So at the time, I was doing all the development. I had the business side from my time at AEI and that experience, I suppose, in music. And Will was doing marketing from his agency background. And then we were kind of sharing the product, sharing some of the business stuff.
Cool.
So as a team, it works out quite well. So I think that's
a good
suggestion.
That makes total sense. You know, I mean, if you're taking a company at early stages where you don't really know where you're going to end up after these 4 months, then having that big mix of skills and people who are kind of open to that idea and very excited about what might come out at the end makes complete sense as to that. That's why they'd get those kind of people in. I mean, why not? You don't want somebody stuck in their ways who has a fixed idea and is open to kind of their way of working or the startup mentality. So yeah, I mean, you went in with that idea. How quickly did it all change?
Well, on the first mentoring or the first review session, I think in the first week, the idea for the kind of music licensing thing fell apart very, very quickly. So from that point on, we were very free in terms of that we didn't have any idea.
Right, okay.
Which for me was terrifying.
Not even a backup one.
Not really, no. I mean, we had the live streaming platform there, but the thing is that when you're at that stage of Ignite, it's all, especially that first month, is all about not actually having an idea. It's more about trying different concepts out with the mentors that you meet. I don't know, I'm not sure. I know Stan mentioned a little bit about Techstars and how that works, but with Ignite, the first month at least, sometimes a little longer, is really intense mentoring. So we did two, three or four, sometimes 4 days a week of mentoring, sometimes up to 10 mentors a day across all industries, including, you know, some previous companies. It was mainly, thinking back, it's mainly just to have, it's just mainly a test and an audience of people to kind of pitch your idea or some ideas too.
Yeah.
And that was it. So we'd go in one morning and we'd pitch a video editing app that used social data to automatically find the highlights in videos. And then in the afternoon, we'd go and pitch like a live streaming site for weddings or or a club. One of the investors sort of suggested that we got into school discos, which was like, I'm not really sure that's going to work.
I'm not sure about that one. How did you come up with all these ideas then? It sounds like it's an intense, coming up with 10 ideas a day must be quite tricky.
Yeah, well, it wasn't necessarily 10 a day, if I'm perfectly honest. It was more of a switch around, but the way that we were kind of advised to do it was to really just make sure we wrote down every suggestion. So I think we went in and pitched, you know, live streaming, something similar to what we had, and then you just listen to all of the feedback and how that gets picked apart, and then you don't listen to any one thing, but you kind of get this note board of sticky notes at the end where you can see some leanings towards what may work. And I suppose what we kind of managed to talk out over the month or month and a half that we were in that process was the fact that there's definitely some verticals in music that could really use the live streaming technology that we had or that we were thinking about. It was really, in the end, we didn't even use the technology that we had. But so what we kind of teased out was that originally we were all cut types of music, live streaming, creative live streaming, live streaming of plays, kind of like the Vimeo for live streaming, I suppose. Yeah. And then we were like, well, bands, there's five people in a band. They're all being paid £50 to be there, if that. There's an intensely complicated sound setup.
Yeah.
You need multiple cameras. You need someone to operate the cameras. You need someone to operate the sound desk. Where's the incentive there? And the band's promotion is all based on flyers anyway or whatever, or all their social networks that they have. Whereas a DJ, okay, maybe a DJ has a laptop with a camera and an audio interface in it already.
Mm-hmm.
There's one of them getting all of the money.
Yeah.
their entire career is based on effectively self-promotion,
yeah,
and building that profile, because that's how they get booked. So it didn't happen that quickly, obviously, but we kind of found this.
I can see why you chose that route, definitely.
Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why you mentioned Stan from Headliner, I mean, one of the first thing we built them 5 years ago was a platform that called Bandwagon that matched bands with promoters.
Yeah.
And that worked great and everyone loved it, but you soon realised that it didn't work because no one's got any money and, you know, there's nothing going on there. I mean, there wasn't really a kind of long-standing, very profitable business there. So if you kind of think about it, you're like, oh, cool, that makes sense now. But yeah, like you've come to that decision. A DJ is all about promotion online. Like, they put their mixes up on websites, and what you're doing seems to be a relatively sensible extension of what they're doing anyway.
Yeah. One of the key things out of the Ignite program that they suggest you do is a weekly investor update.
Mm-hmm.
And I still advise anyone that's starting a company to really do that. Just even if you're having a good week, a bad week, just put in a number of like how many people you've registered or what you're doing that week.
Yeah.
We had a week before Christmas where we did an investor update on, Will wrote an investor update on Christmas Day and on New Year's Day. And I was working, coding the whole site up between Christmas and New Year. Wow. And then, yeah, it was the most intense Christmas break ever. And we launched Chew again on January the 5th.
Yeah,
and within the first month, we had about 500 DJs on.
Cool.
So it comes straight out of that community through me linking up with the drum bass community. Will had already had established dubstep DJs on. It just really, we found people really took to it, even though the product was built in a week, really bad. All I let you do is live stream a show and someone watch it.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, and so you coded it yourself as well. I mean, so you have that skill in house of being a developer, which is great. I mean, obviously saves money when you're hiring someone to do that. But lots of people we speak to want to build something amazing.
Yeah.
And a message we constantly give people is just push out the crappiest thing you can that solves your basic problem.
Mm.
Sounds like exactly that's exactly what you did.
Yeah. The most painful thing I hear when I speak to people at the moment around their idea is we've got the prototype. I'm like, great, how many people are using it? And they're like, oh no, we're working on it for another month and then we're launching it.
Yeah.
And it's painful just because you need to see how people actually use what you do or what you're trying to make before you can really answer any of the questions that you should have starting out.
Yeah, definitely. No, hitting customer is the most important thing. Mm. You know, the first time someone hits your product, it's all going to change, essentially, or most of it will anyway.
Yeah.
How has the thing changed since you first launched back in January 2015? Like, where's it gone? What surprised you about where it's gone?
So we kind of really, just put it out there and waited to see how people would take it. What's really changed has been the kind of the method of broadcast. Originally, it was kind of web-based broadcasting, kind of out of necessity, I suppose, just to make it as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm.
We've moved now to a desktop app, which works with DJs that have laptops. We're still in this interesting community of laptop-based DJs.
Mm.
But really, the main thing that's changed is we've just built as many social features as we can around the core of live streaming.
Okay.
So technically, we've got a developer, Sam, soon to be CTO, who just came in and rebuilt everything. But fundamentally, it's still live streaming as a core. Features that we added are follow model, so you can follow DJs and content creators that you like.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a cruise feature, which lets you group together as DJs. So
we have a Lighthouse crew.
You do?
Which I've not been accepted into yet.
What?
Even
so, though, who created it?
Russ, the other,
that's cheeky,
semi DJ in the company. He set that up, and I pressed the button that says join this crew. Yeah. I'm still not listed.
That's a bit of a diss.
I know.
You've got to start a rebel Lighthouse crew.
I know. I can't believe it. But watch the space, everyone. We're going to be laying down some beats or something soon.
Definitely.
I'm not sure about that. Anyway, so carry on.
Yeah, and then the biggest thing that I'm interested to see I'm interested to show, I suppose, how it evolves with our plans over the next 6 months is the chat feature. So we had a basic chat from maybe the second month in.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew it was really important at that point, mainly just so people know that there's someone there. And
So when you first implemented chat, was that just something you got off the shelf and just chucked in there? I mean, how did you approach that?
I'm trying to think now. I'm trying to think. I know originally we put in Facebook used to have a really nice little live live commenting widget. Mm-hmm. I think it's discontinued now, but I think we just chucked that in at the beginning.
So just to prove that people would even use it.
Just And we got some really interesting data around the fact that if there was more than one person in the chat, i.e. basically if there was the DJ and someone watching and they were chatting, the length of the show on average would increase massively.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So a lot of our time and attention now is around how do we improve that.
Okay. So your approach to these features, the stuff you're adding, has that been things that are demanded by the users, or is that kind of things that you also wanted to push out because you wanted to test things? I mean, how does that weigh up?
So it's, again, this is a kind of a good mixture. I think we like to get suggestions. We actually did a, at one point, I think we still have it going, we have a Trello board that's public where we invite our users in to suggest features. We now also have a Slack channel, so we've got a Slack channel where people constantly suggest features. Personally, I'm a fan of doing a similar thing to how I was saying about the Ignite mentoring, of having a wall of sticky notes with, or probably virtual sticky notes in this age in Trello, of all the ideas that people want to see. Mm-hmm. And then divining from that what they actually need, or what they're trying to get at.
Yeah.
A good example of that is actually with the cruise feature. So we've had a bunch of DJs come over from a competitor called Mixify. Mm-hmm. And one of the features on that platform was where you had the ability to point users from your show to another show when you finished.
Oh, okay.
So if you were finishing, I was finishing and I wanted you to play the next set from another location, I could point all the users to that and then they'll be forwarded on. And they wanted that specific feature to come into Chew for them to come across. And it took quite a while of going back and forth about what the actual use case is. Why do you want to do this? Mm. And it came out, there was a few. There was that one, you know, with directing to a friend. There was online festivals that they did.
Oh, okay.
There was radio stations where there's multiple people in multiple locations. And what we actually built was the cruise feature because that actually works identically.
Yeah.
In that if you're all in the crew together and you all stream, and someone's watching that flow from the crew, they'll be redirected automatically onto the next show.
Got it.
But the DJ doesn't have to do anything. They don't have to add a little user ID, a show ID into a field, all that.
Yeah.
It's more about creating the same experience, but
based
on actually why they wanted to do it in the first
place. Yeah, exactly. So not just doing what everyone says, working out the best possible way to kind of get them their end result that they need or they're after. Yeah, that's cool.
I think that's key.
Do you have your own office that you work from? Is there a unit together?
We've got a new office now, actually, in Shoreditch. We came from Idea London, which is a shared working space.
Nice.
But we definitely annoyed some of the startups there. As the only music startup,
of course,
we've been told to turn our grime down on several occasions.
Never turn the grime down. Yeah. What's that all about? These people don't know what's good for them. Looking back now at where you are at this moment, where you plan to be in the future and where you started from, what are the kind of big lessons you learned along the way, do you think?
Okay. So there's a kind of a specific example I can think of post Ignite, and it really comes down to getting things in the right order, I think, as you're building the business. What we did there's actually a few interesting learnings from there, because it comes back to kind of listening to investors too much as well. But out of the back of Ignite, we went out to investors and friends and mentors and said, you know, what should our next step be in terms of like, where do we need to get to raise again? Cause we're on that train, but also, you know, to get us to the next level as a business. And we were given this magical target of getting to 10,000 users. Mm-hmm. So we had this 10,000 users target in our mind. And so at the same time, we've been experimenting with some marketing strategies, and we locked onto Facebook marketing, got some really effective CPMs, fired through, got to 10,000 users or close to 10,000 users. Hurrah! Went back to investors and great, looks good. Get to 25,000 users. So the learning point there was really that investors didn't really care about the number. They cared more about how we got there and how we were actually building something of value rather than just hitting a number.
So what's next? What's the plan?
So it's a really exciting year. We just raised a second kind of seed round.
Cool.
That gets us 9 to 12 months down the road. And the key focus for us now is that magic stage of business, which is making money.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a couple of exciting things that we're trialing over the next month or so that I can't give away.
Boo.
But I'm sure you'll be able to see it.
Yeah,
have to come back to see it.
We'll keep our eyes peeled, definitely.
Yeah. And then at the same time working, like I said earlier, with those senior roles we've just hired to really start bringing large artists and larger partners on board for brand partnership shows and that kind of thing.
I could definitely understand how that would be a way to move forward with the sort of platform that you've got. Definitely a bit more higher profile stuff on there and working with brands. I mean, brands are all over that kind of stuff, aren't they?
So. Yeah. It's the right stage for it now. I have to say, though, one of the things that wasted a lot of time early days was kind of chasing after some of the larger names, larger brands, when really something that I've only kind of accepted, I suppose, lately is actually what is really powerful about our platform is the community, not the big names. Obviously those will bring amazing reach when they come on, but all the ones that we've had up until this point have brought amazing reach to their shows, but actually focusing on that untapped audience has been what's been really useful.
I suppose it must be nice to potentially have built a platform that could see an up-and-coming artist go through and gain that fame, whereas they might have used, say, I don't know, MySpace or whatever in the past,
and it
could become, or maybe is becoming, one of those platforms that can breed the next level of artist that's going to kind of change the future of whatever genre they're in, you know?
Well, that's the thing I'm more excited about, actually, to be perfectly honest, than the larger names, is the fact that we have found this vertical in that exists in this generation, I suppose, that is becoming apparent in things like Twitch with gaming, which is a generation that is equally content consumers and creators at the same time. And music is always traditionally a little behind in terms of new technologies and appealing to the new communities. And I think we've really struck that community in music, and we're the first people to be there. So as that builds, it's really exciting to see how we can colonize the UGC young audience space, live streaming space in the next few years.
That's awesome. Really good to hear about Chu. I'm actually going to go and listen out at my desk and put on a stream and see what's going on. I believe we're going to try and hook up the Lighthouse crew, aforementioned Lighthouse crew, with some kind of stream in the future. You guys might want to avoid that because it's going to be a train wreck.
Definitely not.
Probably the best thing to finish off now is just tell everyone where they can find you online. I'm sure they'd be up for checking out more and following on Twitter and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Where are you?
So I write at benbowler.com. I put up my talks and articles there. I'm also Ben Bowler on Twitter. Let's see, what are the cool platforms these days?
I've
you could
no
add
idea.
Me on Snapchat at that as well if you'd like to. Or Instagram, we'll see. And also on Chu. I'm chu.tv/ben, where I'm doing some music production. chu.tv/discode is my old disco and house pseudonym. And hopefully and hopefully we'll be streaming on the Lighthouse crew as well. So
give that
a follow, cool. Ready to go for when the show comes live.
We will definitely link that up and promote it heavily. Can you play records on Chu? I feel like it's
definitely.
Right, okay, good. Because that's all I've got. Well, that's not true at all. I've got a laptop. But I thought it might be nice to have someone play vinyl on there for once.
Yeah, it's encouraged.
Awesome. That's very good. Thanks again. Really good to have you on. For everyone out there, please feel free to check out more from our podcast and blog, wearelighthouse.com. If you've enjoyed this, please pop to iTunes and drop us a rating, leave us a review. Please be nice. But that really helps us. Tune in next time. We're going to have more people in to talk about their startups. We'll have a bit more waffling from us lot about things we do. Find us on Twitter at We Are Lighthouse, wearelighthouse.com. Until next time.